ease the minds of my listeners, if you will, about someone who might be concerned about handing that authority over to a bank?
It's really challenging. I mean, we've heard some horror stories where, you know, customers really do believe that they're acting on behalf of somebody in bank security, or, you know, they really do believe that this transaction is legit, that that Nigerian prince really does love me, unfortunately. And so, you know, sometimes there are really uncomfortable conversations that even the bank CEO will have with the customer to say, look, you know, we actually took a look and we investigated this particular outfit you want to give this money to, and they are just not legit. So it's not just an arbitrary decision by a teller to just deny you the opportunity of accessing your funds. And the worst thing in the world are the horrible stories that we're hearing. Their children are angry at them. How could you have gotten scammed? You know, their spouses are divorcing them. How could you fall for that again? What's really sad is when families then look at the bank and say, how come you didn't do more?
In a world of long-windedness, I'm here to deliver you the Capital News. Let's get straight to the point.
So welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast. My name is Representative Joe DiOrsi. I represent the 47th Legislative District in Pennsylvania, for my listeners who don't know. And with me in studio, in person, today is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Association for Community Banks, Kevin Shivers. Kevin, thanks for joining.
Thank you for this opportunity. Really appreciate it, Representative.
Yeah, so when me or my constituents think about banks, sometimes our mind goes to the big guys, you know, the national associations, the big groups that we go to for our financing. But you represent community banks. Can you draw the distinguishing line there?
Sure. So community banks is a culture. It's about taking local deposits and investing those in the local community. And that could be you through small business lending, that could be loans for home mortgages, that could be charitable giving in your local community. These community banks, typically they're under $10 billion in assets, so they're really small. Maybe employee sizes as on average of about 50 to 75, 100 employees per institution. But really, they're the catalyst in our local communities for economic growth. Small businesses typically don't get that first loan from a giant mega national bank, or even from a credit union for that matter. They'll go to a small bank, a community bank, for that opportunity. So really a driver for economic activity locally.
Yeah, so these are your neighborhood banks. You mentioned a first loan for a up-and-coming business and entrepreneur. These are the folks in your neighborhood, in your towns, in your cities, who know the work culture, who, when someone comes in to apply for a loan, they get it. It's not like this national guy who just sees numbers and columns.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think of when you're part of a charitable organization and you'd like a contribution from your local bank. Well, if you go into a local bank that's headquartered in your community, they're going to look at you, give us a letter. They will be able to make decisions based on the people that actually work there in the community. The CEO probably is a neighbor. The bank teller you probably know because of Little League or, yep, or a baseball activity of some type. But that decision is made locally. When, you know, you go to a branch of a big national bank, you fill out that application for that charitable giving, that donation. Well, that now goes to maybe it's Philadelphia or maybe even New York City, and those decisions are being made there. The same with when you think of small business lending or home mortgages. When you go to a community bank, the local board is typically comprised of people that live in that local community. They want to make loans in that local community, whereas with a big mega bank, a national bank, those decisions are happening in rooms that are hundreds of miles away from that local community.
Right. So you're essentially the voice for the community bankers in the state as regards legislation and goings-on in Harrisburg.
I do my best. We try. We have about 120 community banks that are headquartered in Pennsylvania. That number is down. It's probably about a third of what it was in our heyday back in the 1980s. And even nationally, you know, there were literally tens of thousands of banks across the country. We're now down to about 4,000 banks of all sizes across America. Yeah. We've lost 6 banks in the last 2 years here in Pennsylvania due to consolidation. We're losing banks at about 3.5% a year. Now, it's a little bit better than the national average, but it's still a concern because economic data shows that when a community bank leaves an area, that area suffers. There are fewer opportunities for capital infusion through a small business loan or a microloan or a home mortgage. There are fewer deposits working in the community to support that community. So there is a reportable economic impact when a bank will leave a community.
Yeah, so let's drill down on that trend a little bit. I had called you a couple weeks ago because I had an observation. It just seems like and part of it is perhaps the financial culture and how more high-tech folks tend to be these days. But I noticed that yet another one of my local/regional banks had closed a physical location. And I called and I said, is this a microcosm of what's happening statewide, nationally? It seems to be. So what's the backstory to that? Why this trend?
Yes, there really is a trend, Joe, and it's economics driven, right? It's the cost of regulation. You know, the cost of regulation for a small bank is exponentially higher in a small community bank than it is for a large national bank. And you can imagine that large national bank has floors of people to handle their compliance costs. In a small community bank, that responsibility is across just a handful of people. And that cost keeps getting higher and higher. And as well, you know, you have government that is working harder and harder to reduce the fee income that a bank can use to be able to provide those types of services to support their local constituents. So when you have the cost of actually running a bank and providing services continue to go up, you have the regulatory pressures that are placed upon those banks, and then you have just general competition, it makes it harder and harder. A lot of us are now getting used to just banking on our phones. And, yeah. You know, you start to have seen an explosion in these online banks or financial institutions. And, you know, your constituents may not think anything of the fact that they're putting their money in an online bank. The trouble is those deposits are not, they don't remain in the local community. Those deposits, again, are going somewhere else. And all of those financial decisions are being made by people in a boardroom that may not even be in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. So obviously one of the more acute problems, in fact, it's hit my family. My mom was scammed. Particularly with seniors, is this financial exploitation, the scamming is getting more complex, it's getting smarter. And you guys, and I believe you've teamed up with the larger banks, I think it's a common goal, is to stop that. What's the initiative? What would you like to see done in Pennsylvania to stop the exploitation of seniors?
And I'm so sorry about that impact in your family, and we see it all the time. The scammers are getting so much more sophisticated. We always have to stand guard, particularly with older Pennsylvanians, with caregivers, with loved ones, you know, who are taken from mom or dad or grandmom or someone who they're working for, and those scams happen. And our people, our bankers, could tell you harrowing stories of circumstances that they've caught at the teller window, where someone is being taken advantage of by a caregiver, a loved one, or someone they know. Mm-hmm. And you know, we need more tools to be able to combat that. The problem has only gotten worse because of these electronic scams. And many of these electronic scams that we're seeing, and again, through email and other things, they're actually part of international crime sprees. I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but literally, there are organized perpetrators that are based in other countries, in Asia, in Eastern Europe, and other places, who spend all day working to steal money from the elderly. And the scams are just so sophisticated. We had an 80-year-old man who walked into the teller line at his local bank and tried to withdraw $60,000. And he was told, go at this time of the day, look for the teller at this end of the line, the one who doesn't
That's
look like they're paying attention. You know, when they ask, when the teller asks you why you want to withdraw $60,000 in cash, tell them you're buying a car for your spouse and it's a surprise, so you just would like the cash. When they say, how about we, you know, how about we work with you when you go to the car dealership and, you know, you get them to call us and we can wire the money. No. You know, I don't haven't made a decision. So they'll actually coach the individual through this, and that individual wind up being a partner in the money being, you know, in them being a victim of this crime. It's horrible. And we've seen where you'll get a call, an elderly person will get a call. You know, we're with bank security. We're trying to, you know, we believe that there's fraud in the bank. We're going to, what's your account? We're going to put some money in there. And then, you know, you don't tell the bank tellers, you know, when you're withdrawing it, but we just want to see where the money goes. And they develop trust and confidence. Sometimes seniors want to be part of something important. They were important their whole life, and now all of a sudden they have a chance to be part of something important again. So they follow along. They don't tell the tellers. They listen to all of the details that that representative on the phone told them about, and then they take that money and they put it in a crypto ATM at a local garage or gas station, a convenience store, and that money is never to be found again. We've heard of circumstances where somebody will be told that, you know, there's a bench warrant for your arrest. And, you know, here you need to put $2,500 into the crypto ATM. And, you know, that'll, and people will do it without even thinking about it. So we've been working in the legislature here, you and members of the Republican caucus and as well the Senate Republican and Democrats over in the Senate on legislation that would give tools to banks to be able to help in stopping this crime. Now, part of that includes allowing financial institutions to place temporary holds when they suspect that a senior customer is a victim of crime. That sounds like a misnomer, right? That, you know, we believe that that's our money and we should have full access to our money. Absolutely. But if there's something that a bank can do, your financial institution, to help protect you from being defrauded, we need to try. Now, unfortunately, some advocates on, you know, have taken this issue and said, no, the bank needs to be fiduciary. So if someone has, you know, has money stolen from them, it's the responsibility of the bank to make them whole. Effectively, you're looking at a bank in that context of being an insurance carrier, right? That's not the whole point of a financial institution. It's to hold your money and to give you the opportunity to be able to deploy that how you see fit. But I think there is an opportunity for our members to be able to be helpful in that conversation. The polling that we've done statewide, Joe, is that over 70% of Pennsylvanians are willing to give community banks that authority to be able to place temporary holds on transactions that they suspect are fraudulent, even if a mistake occurs and maybe that isn't a bad transaction. But it's something that we really need to be thinking about. It's no different than if there is suspected fraud on your credit card, as an example, and you get that call from your financial institution
or
saying, hey, or a
I've
text, did
this.
You?
Yeah.
But, you know, the scammers are coming at all times. There's different types of fraud. Our members, the community banks, take this serious as a heart attack. We've been working in the legislature. Currently, Senate Bill 738 would give banks the tools that they need to combat this type of crime. And, you know, we're just hoping that, you know, while we're trying to figure out the budget, that this is something that could, you know, that, that we can lean in on and solve once and for all.
So some of our listeners might have a red flag go up. I'm sure your bill initiative is very narrow. So ease the minds of my listeners, if you will, about someone who might be concerned about handing that authority over to a bank.
Absolutely. It is, you know, giving the bank just the ability to have that private conversation with the bank customer, just to make sure that they understand the ramifications. It's really challenging. I mean, we've heard some horror stories where you know, customers really do believe that they're acting on behalf of somebody in bank security, or, you know, they really do believe that this transaction is legit, that that Nigerian prince really does love me, unfortunately. And so, you know, sometimes there are really uncomfortable conversations that even the bank CEO will have with the customer to say, look, you know, we actually took a look and we investigated this particular outfit you want to give this money to, and they are just not legit. We can work with the local area agencies on aging and other local support for the elderly. We'll get law enforcement involved. So it's not just an arbitrary decision by a teller to just deny you the opportunity to accessing your funds. There is a full effort that goes into that decision because it's not taken lightly.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that you have access to those funds to be able to do with it what you want. And the worst thing in the world are the horrible stories that we're hearing. Their children are angry at them. How could you have gotten scammed? Mm. You know, their spouses are divorcing them. How could you fall for that again? Or, you know, some seniors are being forced to go back to work to be able to make up the hole. We don't want any of that to happen.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the kinds of fraud that we're talking about. It's not just $100 here or there. You're looking at tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars over years in some circumstances.
A nest egg for a senior citizen.
That's right. And really the fear, the challenge, what's really sad is when families then look at the bank and say, how come you didn't do more? You know, why didn't you step in and stop my grandmother from making this transaction? We don't have that ability. I mean, under law, we have to grant you access to your money to do with whatever you choose to do. We need to recognize that sometimes what you think is too good to be true might be, and give us the resources to be able to slow that transaction down just to make sure. Just again, you're talking about somebody's nest egg.
Yep. Lightning round question here, Kevin. We considered in Commerce a couple of months ago. I believe the bill, if I'm not mistaken, it didn't ban, but it restricted the overdraft fees. And again, that sounds great. You put yourself into the shoes of someone who might be just a little bit late on a payment and you get hit, you know, with an overdraft fee. But what was the backstory on that?
Sure. Everybody hates fees, right? I hate fees. I laugh. My wife was applying for her renewal of her passport. And, you know, they basically tell you when you submit the form, it's going to take a really, 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 really long time for you to get your passport back. But if you pay this fee to the government, we'll get it back to you within 5 days. Well, that's interesting. Why are we paying more for someone to do their job, right? Or then how often are we stuck with fees that go into whether it's your telephone bill or TV or whatever? And what your listeners need to recognize is that fees that are charged in most instances are the result of some type of government regulation, right? There is a compliance cost that the government is forcing that particular company or industry to be involved with. In particular, in the banking industry, the government is regulating banks to make sure the money system, our financial system, is clean of the bad guys. So, you know, there's no money for drugs, that there's no human trafficking. And so there are responsibilities for banks to make sure that the money system, when a check is cashed, that there is no illegal activity that's happening as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And there's a cost to doing that, right? And in addition, if you write a check and you don't have money in your account, that's actually like an unsecured loan, mm-hmm. right? If you write a $100 check and you don't have any money, the bank is hoping that transaction, if it goes through, that they're hoping you're going to pay that. And there's a cost to that, right? Like mm-hmm. we need to make sure that risk is managed because we've got to keep track of it. We got to make sure, and then we got to, you know, come back to you. So about, 25 or 30 years ago, there was the advent of what we call overdraft protection. The idea that no longer would your check bounce and then it would appear on the bodega wall where you had to deal with the shame of bouncing a check, that we would allow you to overdraft on your account If you had money in your savings, we'd move it over to your checking account. Then, you know, if you didn't have money there, in your account, we would allow that check to go through. But there would be a service charge to be able to make that transaction. Again, it's an unsecured loan.
Mm-hmm.
And the big banks have made a fortune on this type of overdraft fee. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau at the federal level found the big banks turned this into a giant profit-making center.
Mm.
And they even found in their report that the community banks didn't do anything, that the community banks were providing this service, but they weren't making it a profit center in their financial institution. But as a result, there have been, at the federal level, there was a big push to cap the fees that would be charged. And when that regulation died at the federal level, there are some states like Pennsylvania where we thought, all right, we're going to arbitrarily cap fees at the state level too. Two problems with the state law that we pointed out, and we are grateful that you supported us. Number one, this only would apply to state-regulated banks.
Mm-hmm.
So every national bank, every nationally chartered bank, all of the biggie banks wouldn't be subject to it. It would only be your small banks in Pennsylvania that are not nationally chartered, number one. And number two, the fees were capped at a rate that didn't even cover this overdraft insurance program. For many small banks, they farm this out to a third party just to be able to reduce the cost of operation.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost would not be covered, number one. Number two, there are many families, many businesses, in particular small businesses, who have multiple accounts and they're constantly moving money. And sometimes you just forget. And so you have habitual check bouncers and they don't do it because they just don't care. They did it because they have so many accounts that they're moving money from.
Mm-hmm.
But they look at overdraft protection as, thank God I have it and I'm willing to pay the fee because guess what? My taxes are being paid or
yep.
I'm being able to pay my employees and their payroll account. But there's still a cost to the bank to do that. So when you cap that fee, you're not allowing the bank to recover that cost. You're doing nothing to control behavior. So if you do have habitual offenders that just don't care, why are they going to do anything better with their financial discipline? Because they don't have to pay for it.
Right.
Three, the bank is going to be scrutinized for how many bounced checks that they deliver, because there actually is a metric that a bank is measured by at the federal and state regulatory level.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we do have, unfortunately, some banks in Pennsylvania that are very small who can't afford overdraft protection as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legislation that you opposed, thankfully, God forbid you increase the number of financial institutions that won't offer overdraft protection, because the cost of that compliance is going to be too great for the fee income that they're going to be generating to run the program. So again, it's one of those issues, just like you see so many times here in Harrisburg, it's just too good to be true. Like, none of us would like to pay fees. And again, I still take issue with the federal government. Why do I have to pay more to get my passport on time?
Yep.
But then why are you scrutinizing me or our institutions for doing a job that they're just trying to help their customers, save their reputation and not have to worry about that bounce check on the bodega wall?
Yeah, that's important context. And like a lot of things we consider here in Harrisburg, they look good. But when you dig into the details, they can be harmful.
Well, I always hear people talking about junk fees, and all I keep thinking about is, let's have a conversation about junk regulations, right? I mean, when you go into any business and you see all those posters on the wall, think about it this way. Every one of those posters is a result of a government mandate, right? So whether it's going into a school bus business or a school or a doctor's office or a hospital or a bank, there is a reason why all of those different papers are up on the wall or all of the disclosures that you have. And in fact, when we were talking about this legislation, there were those on the other side of the aisle who said, why do consumers have to contend with all of these disclosure documents, you know, that just so many pages of these. And we're like, it's because of what you guys have enacted.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the 6 pages of disclosure as a result of government action, whether it's law, statutes, or whether it's through regulatory mandates,
mm-hmm.
that's the reason for all of those disclosure documents. So if you think it's confusing that a customer may not understand that there is a fee associated with overdraft, well, let's think of all of the other rules that you're forcing that bank to comply with, which is the reason for the pages and pages and pages of disclosure.
Very true, and we're just talking about the banking industry. He is Kevin Chivers. He's the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Kevin, thanks for joining.
Pleasure.
This has been Straight to the Point. Visit repjod.com/mypodcasts.